FAR Radio, or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Problems, problems, problems all day long. Will my problems work out right or wrong? My baby don't like anything I do. My teacher seems to feel the same way too.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. If you want to call into today's show, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. And today is a Tuesday. It's not the Wednesday, but I got the Wednesday guy on Tuesday because I got a Tuesday guy on Wednesday. But hey, it's my effing show. I will do it as I want. Good morning, Nick Nugent. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Dave. How about you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. At 40 below, what the hell?
Yeah. I do have a question for you, 40 below. Made me think about it. Mm-hmm. We've done these shows since 2019.
And boy, it goes by fast.
Yes, it does. And we've talked about a lot of things, and I know that you are a bright guy, that you tend to look situations over and analyze them. Well, the question I have is, how, in the time that you were mayor, did you miss the fact that it gets too cold to pick up the trash and plow the roads?
Well, sometimes something just gets by you.
I guess so.
You know, no one's fallible. Everyone's fallible. No one's perfect, but I'll just leave it at that.
That's good enough.
We had a great discussion on that last Friday with Brett Roderman from the borough. He was all hyper pissed at the city of Fairbanks, and boy, I got it out of his system. So you know, it is what it is, and it's back to 40 below. And guess what? We'll see what happens.
That's right. You know, the guy needs to warm up, and sometimes a little bit of ranting and raving in this weather gives you a warm feeling.
Yeah. You know, the thing about it is we don't stop at 40 below. We're Fairbanksons.
Yeah.
Simple as that. But anyway, you put together a wonderful presentation here. You know, usually when I get them, I read them over, and man, I was drawn into this one. This is a story. This is a story about an incredible person that meets incredible people, and they do an incredible thing.
Harry Carstens is one of those people that it seems like he just keeps popping up in Alaska's history.
I know.
He's someone really famous goes somewhere. Well, you find out Harry took him or guided him.
Yeah. And Fairbanks, it's Harry Carstens, and man.
Well, this is the second part. We started out his early time in Alaska. Was that 2 months ago, I think?
Yeah.
And back in November. Here the story is going to kind of shift and becomes more or less takes place in the environments of Kantishna and Mount McKinley.
Yeah, a story.
It is quite a series of events. So we've looked at his arrival in Alaska, time in the Klondike. He mushed the mail, transition from previous activities centered on the Yukon to the interior of Alaska. Harry was always on the lookout for new opportunities. He didn't, you know, talk about the don't let moss grow on you.
Well, yeah.
He was that guy. And he was always looking for something. Well, he went to many new mining strikes. Interestingly, he continued not becoming a miner. He realized that as long as there were a lot of guys out digging in the dirt every day, there were a lot of things they needed, food not being the least of which.
He was basically the Amazon.
Yeah.
He was day. He was the Amazon of his day.
He was absolutely support services.
Yeah. You know, you needed, he got it. He found it. He guided. He captained. He made sure whatever your endeavor was available to be successful.
I think it's funny that when you look at the time when he was just doing transportation, he had clients that ranged from Bishop Rowe to the dance hall queen, Fannie Hill. So he knew every segment and strata of Alaska society.
Yeah.
If they were moving in the winter, Harry knew them.
That's Alaska.
It is. Well, during that time, Alaska was being explored by a number of USGS surveys. Men such as Brooks and Pringle explored as much as possible. There was a growing awareness of Alaska. Well-read people would read these geologic survey reports, which mm-hmm. were put out annually and in sections. So you could buy the section or get it from the library that you were interested in. That seemed to attract a lot of attention, particularly off East Coast academics and wealthy people. I guess they had the leisure time to think about someplace like Alaska and coming there.
Yeah.
There were a number of amateurs who were well-educated people, but they came and did expeditions and different things as a hobby, not necessarily as their profession. So Mount McKinley, of course, was a major draw. I'll just use Mount McKinley because that's what it was at that time, and it's easier for me to try not to switch back and forth. Frederick Cook came for the first of his many attempts on McKinley that culminated in a false claim of success on about his second or third try. That was one of the great scandals of this age, which led to the rest of our story, if you will.
Yeah.
If Paul Harvey were here, he'd be telling us all about
this. The rest of the story.
Yes, he'd be telling us about it and building us up. Among the new rivals was a millionaire hunter, Charles Sheldon, who hired Harry as a guide, and Burt Webb backed out. He couldn't go, and he had been recommended by Judge Wickersham, so it was fortuitous that Webb backed out.
This is what gets me about Sheldon. You know, an entrepreneur par none, and he wants to go see about the Dall sheep because it's recently discovered. He wants to know. He wants to be the foremost expert on Dall sheep.
He does.
And he starts taking trophies for the Smithsonian.
Oh.
My God. Well, you know, but, you know, other than my mines in Mexico, I'm going to go shoot a few sheep and watch them, even in December.
And it's funny to me that Sheldon, who was a sport hunter or trophy hunter and collected animals for the Smithsonian and other institutes, mm-hmm. was totally appalled by market hunting.
Yeah.
And there are some interesting there were interesting mindsets that today, I don't know if we have quite the same differences
until
you get to politics.
There's always mindset differences there.
Absolutely. Well, Sheldon was known to be courteous. He wasn't a complainer. He was helpful in camp. He was a guy that if you were the guide, you would be happy to have with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just be a good companion. In 1902, he'd made investments in Mexico, which allowed him to retire at the age of 35.
Jerk.
Certainly, silver investments were very good in Mexico in that era.
Yeah.
The people who moved from, who had been in Arizona and the western states in the 1880s.
Moved out.
When they went south, they did very well because they had that several years of experience of mm-hmm. knowing what they were looking for.
Yeah.
Well,
and the Mexican government wasn't what it is now.
It certainly was different.
And he didn't have to deal with the other business owners of illegal aspects in Mexico at that time either.
That's true. They weren't around, although they did after the Mexican Revolution.
Pancho Villa. Yeah, Pancho Villa. Yeah.
So it could be a little hectic along the border.
That's true.
Sheldon moved in circles which included the likes of Theodore Roosevelt, Gifford Pinchot, Alexander Graham Bell, and Richard Byrd. He offered to collect specimens for the U.S. Biological Survey, and like you mentioned, he had this absolute fascination with mountain sheep and wanted to investigate the Dall sheep, which Dall had described not that many, maybe a decade or so earlier. the Dall sheep was very unknown at the time. It was probably the last of the great sheep that maybe stone sheep in parts of Canada, but certainly the Dall sheep was, if that was your interest.
The hidden one.
That was, yes, that was the one that took the most effort.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. You want to call into today's show, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The Find Out Free Pregnancy Center provides free, confidential pregnancy tests to any woman in need. But they offer so much more to women, men, and families. By participating in one-on-one parenting classes selected by you, you can take advantage of Earn While You Learn, earning valuable credit to spend on children's items and clothing in Maria's Boutique. The Find Out Free Pregnancy Center. Call 907-455-8255 or visit online findoutfree.com. Findoutfree.com.
Well, it's dark, it's cold, but hey, at least we don't have to worry about a sunburn. Hey Fairbanks, Les Nichols with Fairbanks Nissan. This time of year absolutely wreaks havoc on our cars. Hard starts, no starts, is my winterization working? Heaters that aren't heating? How old is my battery? Brakes that are stiffer than a New Year's cocktail? Suspension that feels every single bump in the road? And life doesn't stop. You still have to get to work, drop off the kids, pick up the kids, do the shopping. And when you call your usual shop with a problem, they'll tell you they can get you in sometime this summer. Maybe it's time for a New Year's resolution. Stop waiting in line and call Fairbanks Nissan. Yes, we sell Nissans, but we work on all makes and models, even yours. In fact, we probably do more work on other brands than we do on Nissans. And we work with almost all extended warranty companies. So you can call us even if you got your warranty somewhere else. When you need help in a hurry, not months from now, call Fairbanks Nissan. Schedule your service online at fairbanksnissan.com. That's fairbanksnissan.com. Fairbanks Nissan, here when winter doesn't wait.
Yes, Taco Thursday is a thing, and it happens every Thursday at Big Daddy's. Big Daddy's serves up the most amazing chicken tacos, loaded with shredded cheese and packed with flavor. These delicious, filling tacos are just $2 each every Thursday at Big Daddy's Barbecue. And don't forget the sides, fries, okra, baked beans, and more. Great food, great prices, great idea. Chicken Taco Thursdays at Big Daddy's, located on Wickersham between 1st and 2nd Avenue. Big Daddy's Barbecue, the northernmost southern barbecue.
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR Weather.
High of 24 below, today, under mainly cloudy skies with a slight chance for snow. Northerly winds around 5 miles per hour. 31 below tonight, chance for snow. About an inch of snow tonight through tomorrow with another inch Thursday through Thursday night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back in the studio here with Nick Nugent. We are talking about Harry Carstens, Part Deuce.
Yes. Well, Harry and Sheldon hit it off well. They were very similar people as far as their outdoor interests, you know, educationally and so, no. But they had an incredible amount in common. They could just spend time together and enjoy every minute of it. One of the things they did, which I found kind of interesting, they climbed to the 8,900-foot level on Mount McKinley just to see if the sheep went up that high to look for signs of sheep.
Since we're here.
Yeah, and we're not talking about a bunch of guys that went over to REI or Beaver Sports and bought the finest Gore-Tex and lightweight equipment.
They, you know, canvas tents, thick ropes.
They carried firewood.
Yeah.
Hard to imagine. Well, there they found a cache that had been left by Cook and one of Wickersham's camps from the sourdough trip a few years earlier. Well, the two of them were the first to realize that there was a possibility of getting a route up the mountain by the through what is now called the Harper and Muldrow Glaciers to the summit. And Sheldon, before he ever left, was already talking about when he came back.
Mm-hmm.
So in the spring of 1907, Harry received a telegram from Sheldon asking him to prepare for a year-long trip. He set to work at once. And so that Sheldon wouldn't have a lot to do when he arrived, they did head for Glacier City, and low water that year was kind of holding their progress up. So they added a month just packing supplies. That's what they, you know, the amount they needed for a year. It took them a month to get it, what would have been done by the boat taking them on up to Glacier City. Their cabin had been seen by Sheldon the year before. He knew where it was, and it was a perfect place to accommodate the game they wanted. After a lot of days, Sheldon was tracking sheep for up to 12 hours a day so that he could really figure out what do these animals do in the course of a day.
They eat. They sleep.
They do.
And then the fall, they...
Unless they see wolves...
They go make baby sheep.
Yes. Unless they see wolves or bears, I'm sure they had a lot more leisurely life than Sheldon.
Yeah. I would hope so.
Well, they were looking around, and Harry went off to get more material. At this point, Sheldon began to decide he was going to lobby for it to become a national park. He thought it really needed protected. It was so spectacular, and he was quite overwhelmed if you read some of his writings. It was like every day when his eyes opened, he just, this is great. And that was his general attitude. Well, they thought that Pioneer Ridge would be the best way, although, in fact, the best way to the top is by the South Ridge, now called Karstens Ridge. On June 11th, 1908, Sheldon left the Toklat for Fairbanks. He was planning on an autumn trip to the Koyukuk with Harry when dire financial news, the Panic of 1907, had started to affect some of his major investments. He had to leave, went to New York, but he was more determined than ever to see that we would have a national park and the first superintendent would be Harry. That he just couldn't think that there was possibly a man alive that could do better. During these years, there were actually, prior, there had been three attempts to climb the mountain starting in 1903 with Judge Wickersham's party. They reached around 10,000 feet. That same year, Dr. Cook with five others reached 11,300. Claim disputed from the time it was made. In 1910, the Sourdough Expedition climbed the lower north peak via Muldrow Glacier. They planted a spruce pole there near the top. That's kind of a famous event.
Mm-hmm. Went to the wrong peak.
They did. Because from the ground, due to the optical illusion, the north peak looks like the higher one.
Yeah.
Well, there were also two other expeditions, the Mazama Mountaineering Club of Oregon and the Explorers Club, set out to disprove Dr. Cook's claims. One of the things, Cook accidentally published a photograph of himself standing on the peak of Mount McKinley, and there's a higher peak in the background.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, sorry.
It's a little dishonest and not necessarily clever.
You're not in the Himalayas.
Well, Harry began about this time to seriously want to climb McKinley and hoped that he could have Sheldon as a climbing partner based on all their earlier times. But unfortunately, Sheldon was still attending to business issues. Harry then began to pay attention to some of the letters that Archdeacon Hudson Stuck, the Episcopal missionary at Tanana, was sending him. Stuck had long wanted to make the climb. And he says, I have pondered and dreamed my 7 years of being here of climbing it. Stuck was well known for mushing all over Alaska on church business. That had not made him qualified to lead a climb. He knew how to sleep outdoors in the winter.
Yeah.
But it also, we find out, he depended a lot on the people with him.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he didn't have the skills that one might think. Well, the agreement they came up with, Stuck would provide the equipment and provisions. Harry would provide the leadership and the technical know-how. Stuck was born in London. Looking for adventure, he left England for Texas in 1885, spent the next 3 years teaching in San Antonio. In 1889, he went back to Dallas Seminary and pursued a ministry of social justice and met Peter Trimble Rowe, the Archbishop here, recruited Stuck to come to Alaska. The two were quite a contrast. Stuck constantly overspent his budget and spent on guides, never traveled alone. The guides did teach Stuck the hazards of the winter trail and the art of trailblazing. He was a fan of Robert Service, Jack London, and John Muir. He also, though, was never totally at ease with the cold, knowing that one mistake could be crippling or fatal. He didn't trust himself like a man like Harry did enough to know, I can make a mistake, and I can overcome it.
Yeah.
That was Stuck's shortcoming. So he worked for Prohibition to protect the native people. That did not make him a bit popular. He was burned in effigy in Fairbanks for it. In 1910, was the 25th anniversary of the Episcopal Church, and they hit on the idea that a climb of Mount McKinley would be excellent publicity. Here, this kind of British tradition of adventurism, where when you're the second son in a family, you go off to some wild part of the world and either get a lot of fame or you're never seen again, took over. Stuck also seemed to have a motive to discredit Dr. Cook, and that was an interesting motive. He wanted to expurge a lie from the great mountain.
Hmm.
Well, he knew he'd have to have the best of guides. The writer, John McPhee, called Karstens a man of maximum practical application. So he brought virtues to the effort, but he could also be combative. He had a rather volcanic temperament at times. He was a self-made man with absolute confidence in his own judgment, which he had learned over the years. He took all criticism personally.
Ooh.
He didn't really care to climb with Stuck. He rather would have climbed with Sheldon. Well, that's where the stage was set. He stayed busy with transporting gold for the mines in the Cleary area. On one trip, moved 190 pounds of gold. Imagine that today.
Yeah, you better be Fort Knox.
He did all of his gold moving with no losses, no irregularities. He made trips as far as Ophir and to the Anoka River claims. One trip took him from Iditarod to Kaltag with $40,000. On a few of these trips, he did cross paths with Stuck and Walter Harper, and the discussion would usually be about climbing McKinley. Harry added for himself a 30-horsepower scow for 1911 and spent the winter of 1911 and 12 visiting relatives in Chicago. They communicated during that time, and eventually they decided that they would climb. Harry decided the only way he could do it was climb with Stuck, and he was hoping to vindicate Charlie McGonigal and the Glen Creek boys' trip to the North Summit. The expeditions then of 1912 worried Stuck as he thought he might be beaten to the summit, and only the group led by Belmore Brown had the expertise to succeed, but they made the strange decision to mush all the way from Seward to their base camp instead of sending supplies from Fairbanks to Valdez and then over shorter trails.
You mean Valdez to Fairbanks?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that would have been actually the wrong way. What they did, they overshot their mark before they started. They were worn out with a trip. It'd be like running the Iditarod to warm up for the Cusco 300 or something. They just were done.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break here. Going to give you some bumper music, The Police. And I remember this song, do-do-do-da-da-da, and it's not one of my favorites. Then we're going to have some Fox News, some state news, some commercials, and some weather, and we will be back.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live.
Fox News, I'm John Saucier. President Trump's in Michigan today. He's speaking at the Detroit Economic Club, but first stopped by a Ford plant. And during his tour of the plant, the president told the press assembled there, Ford's business is better than ever.
They're doing 24 hours now, 6 days a week. And they do expansions, and they're building more plants in the United States because of tariffs.
There are several recent polls showing a clear majority of Americans have a negative view of the economy. House GOP Conference Chair Lisa McClain praising funding bills that Congress passed as a deadline to fund the government approaches once again.
We are actually delivering full year funding through a transparent process that actually guts bureaucracy, wasteful spending, and puts America first.
Senators advancing a $174 billion partial government funding package on Monday as lawmakers face that January 30th deadline to avoid another government shutdown. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Today's sports report being brought to you by McKinley Orthopedic Sports Medicine and Spine. High school basketball tonight, the top team in the state, the unbeaten West Valley Wolfpack boys, they'll host the North Pole Patriots. That's our prep game of the week. We're broadcast at 7:30 tonight on 107.9 FM, 820 AM ESPN Radio, at ESPNRadioFairbanks.com, and on our ESPN Radio app. The Alaska Dog Mushers Association finally got to race this past weekend. Winners in the respective classifications, Molly Cable in the recreation, Gary Markley in open, Jennifer Probert in the 6-dog class, Ashley Franklin wins the 8 and 10 dog classification, Josh Link in the 4-dog, Hazel Sutton and Skeeger, and the junior winners were Eli Markley and Salik Sutton. Next, racing at the Jump Started Race Grounds is set for January 25th with preliminary race number 4. Yukon Quest, yes. Yukon Quest, no. While Yukon Quest Alaska is set
streaming
to start
live
on
online
February
at kfar660.com.
Of the Yukon.
Hey, it's Melissa. Can we be honest? Insurance can feel, well, overwhelming. For years, I stuck with the same company because it felt easier than switching. Then life happened. Our family bought a new car, and the premium jumped so high, I thought it was a typo. A friend said call the Loa Carroll Hubbard Agency, so I did. And I'm so glad I picked up that phone. Loa's team walked me through everything, found discounts I didn't even know existed, and now I'm saving hundreds every month. Don't assume you're stuck. Call the Loa Carroll Hubbard Agency today. You might be shocked in a really good way.
If you're one of the millions of Americans behind on your taxes, if you're afraid to open your mail because IRS collection letters could be coming, listen carefully. The IRS is cracking down, taking paychecks, freezing bank accounts, revoking passports. That's a fact. But here's what most people don't know. There are official tax relief programs designed to help struggling taxpayers. Programs that could save you thousands if you qualify. No one knows these programs better than the experts at Optima Tax Relief. Optima's award-winning team will fight to protect your paycheck, your passport, and your property. Their tax attorneys and licensed tax professionals will work tirelessly to get you the best deal possible with the IRS. Every day, penalties and interest keep piling up, so don't wait. Call Optima now for a free consultation.
Call 800-783-8055. That's 800-783-8055. 800-783-8055.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent here. We're discussing Mr. Carstens, Part 2, and they're getting ready to go off on an expedition to climb a mountain. A little hill.
Yes. And what's interesting, by good fortune, Harry ran into McGonagall in Kantishna and talked to him at great length about what he thought would be the best routes to start on that year, which is partially or mostly maybe what determined their path.
Mm-hmm.
Well, finally, on June 5th, 1912, they began the climb proper. And that's an important date because today...
That's when you end.
Yeah. Almost no one is left on the mountain on purpose on June 5th.
Yeah.
On June 29th, they launched their final assault. So it might have been July 29th, I think. Anyway, 19,000 feet, they could see the summit. And this is Belmore Brown's group. And they were actually turned away standing in the gap between the peaks. They had to turn around and come back. They just weren't able with the weather to get high. So now it's Stuck and Karsten's turn. The party to move camp consisted of Stuck, Harry, Robert Tatum, John Fredson, and Esaias George. It was mid-March for their group. They had actually started a bit before Belmore, moving equipment, but it was taking them much longer. The nights were below zero, the days near zero, so it was prime snow for the dogs. So they were staying pretty rested at this point. On April 1st, they moved into the mountain proper and started taking loads, which consisted of hundreds of donuts, loaves of bread, boiled hams. Their foodstuffs today would be an unimaginable load to a climber. The era of lightweight equipment.
Yeah, we want DoorDash with them donut deliveries.
Far in the future for freeze-dried foods.
Yeah.
Their entire outfit weighed 1.5 tons. The extra help left the group, and the summit team was Karsten, Stuck, Harper, and Tatum, and they proceeded on. They moved up the Muldrow. Stuck rather clumsily lost the sounding pole used to search for crevices. Harry never allowed him in the lead again. Harry was already, though, unfortunately, suffering from snow blindness, and interestingly, ingrown hairs in his beard began to get infected.
Oh, boy.
And it was just, it made him irritable. He described glacier travel, Harry did, as a continuous game of roulette. By a combination of observation and luck, the party never suffered a serious fall. Harry was starting to have digestive issues, which led to a few outbursts. A lot of it aimed at Stuck, who was a pompous individual. It's interesting when people seem to write about Stuck, either praise him or they
condemn him.
Absolutely. Well, they were now, it was up to May 25th. They'd only made 12,500 feet, and everybody but Harper were suffering bouts of illness. On the 27th, Harry and Harper broke over the ridge to the smooth snow above, and that ridge now is Karsten's Ridge, bears Harry's name. They began to sleep better with the stress of the ridge behind them. On June 3rd, Harper was at a rest break with the party when he let out a whoop. He had looked across and saw the flagpole from the 1910 expedition proving the validity of that claim. So here above the 16,000-foot level, Stuck was failing. He was suffering from choking, shortness of breath, near blackouts. Stuck himself said he suffered from the blind staggers. And Harry told Stuck they'd carry him to the summit if needed, because no matter how much he personally felt, he had given Stuck his word, and Harry wasn't going to turn around and not do it. After much privation and suffering from acute altitude sickness, Harper realized there were no more upward steps. They had reached the summit, and they spent weeks cutting steps, moving. It was really an effort that is hard for us to imagine. They carried wood to stay warm with up to 15,000 feet. We described their...
So basically, they got to the top without knowing they're at the top.
They finally just realized they were so tired and so worn out, then Harper really, I'm not going up anymore.
Yeah.
Looked around, and there they were at the top. Well, on June 9th, 1913, they left the last camp on the mountain. They had one last scare when Tatum was tripped by a dog crossing the McKinley River, ended up being saved by Harry. After a stop in Kantishna, they arrived in Tanana June 20th, 3 months and 6 days after they had left Nenana. They passed through Nenana on July 2nd. Harry stayed with Stuck. It was the last time they ever spoke. Harry was boiling mad when he reached Fairbanks to find out all the news stories. Totally focused on Stuck, who was the weakest member of the party and gave no credit to the others. And Harry actually writes well about Harper particularly. Harper was sort of an unsung hero of the climb. Harry blamed Stuck and for all of it and felt particularly that he had shorted Harper after Harper's numerous efforts. Stuck did not learn of Harry's displeasure until late July as he'd been catching up on unfinished church business.
So basically, no one knows who was really at the top first because they didn't know they were at the top.
Well, both Stuck and Harry in their diaries give Harper the credit for being the first on top.
Okay.
They believe he was the first that kind of looked around.
So he was the one chopping in the steps. and he had no more steps to top. To
and
chop.
Basically gave him the happy news, no more up.
Yeah.
Well, he did write to the newspapers that he considered Harry a partner, but a lot of his statements before had been all about Harry just being a guide, so that stuck with Harry, that he wasn't anything more than just a paid hired hand, if you will. They stated that he had no consideration for personal gain and knew that Harry didn't expect such. Well, that was pretty disingenuous. He knew that Harry had to earn a living somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Stuck was a churchman first, and even while he was headed for fundraising events. So Stuck was paid by the church. He had an income at a job. Harry had just given up 3 months of prime income to do this. The publication of The Ascent of Denali, where one line described Harry as the apprentice, particularly fired Harry off, and the news miner referred to Stuck's book as a poorly written novel. So it kind of gives you what people in the know could see through it. The two never reached reconciliation, unfortunately. The attention on McKinley began to build a movement to offer protection to the area. The earliest men working hard for it were men like Sheldon, who had seen the diminishment of game as market hunting grew. Belmore Brown, after returning from the 1912 attempt, visited a friend on the 25th Secretary of the Interior, Walter Fisher, and proposed a Mount McKinley National Park. He started a series of lectures and put part of his money that he made on the lectures into promoting the park. Brownfield found that Sheldon had been laying framework since 1908 and took off on a public effort in mid-1915, and the two of them formed a very formidable partnership with their speaking abilities, their education, and basically the crowds they moved in. Sheldon attempted to enlist Judge Wickersham as a backer, but interestingly, Wickersham, the territorial delegate to Congress, saw the potential for tourism and the protection of wildlife, but he would not support an action which could inhibit mining.
Yeah.
An eventual compromise was reached, which would allow miners to continue to stake claims in the park. With that compromise, Wickersham signed on, and on April 16th, 1916, Wickersham introduced a park bill. He was congratulated by the Boone and Crockett Club, noting that it was fitting, as Wickersham had been on the 1903 climb. There were a lot of controversies. There was one positive, and this far and distant mountain, if not a household name, was certainly well known. So there was never a point from then on that the mountain was not known to the general public.
Fairbanks, we're going to take our final commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
2026 is now in full swing, and Fairbanks Urology, that means an 8-year anniversary of open doors and exceptional patient care. Fairbanks Urology, offering specialized care for men and women, and they're always ready to partner for an improved you. Even better, referrals aren't necessary. Appointments can be scheduled without a long wait. Fairbanks Urology, 1211 Cushman Street, right across from the City of Fairbanks Fire Station. Find them online at fairbanksurology.com. Stop by and meet the team.
Optimize your eyes with Mountain View Eye Center, Interior Alaska's choice for state-of-the-art eye care. Find relief with the most advanced dry eye center in the interior. See clearly and be free of your reading glasses and contacts for good. Optimize your eyes with Mountain View Eye Center. Surgeons Dr. Laura Kearsley and Dr. Jason Crossgree specialize in premium cataract surgery, LASIK laser vision correction, and treatment of eye disease. All insurance accepted. Schedule your consultation. Visit MountainViewEyes.com.
Hey, it's Craig Campo inviting you to kick back with me by the campfire every Saturday for the Outdoor Show. We'll be talking about living the Alaskan outdoor dream with fascinating guests, even some favorite stories and memories from a lifetime spent on the trails and waterways, hunting, fishing, and camping across this great state. Join me, Craig Campo, for the Outdoor Show, brought to you by Campos since 1945. Listen in Saturday afternoons at 12:30 p.m. for the Outdoor Show right here on KFAR Radio.
Weather brought to you by Frontier Outfitters, your store for the outdoors. Your next adventure begins at Frontier Outfitters. For your Alaskan lifestyle, it's Frontier Outfitters.
KFAR Weather.
Slight chance for snow this afternoon. Otherwise, more clouds than sun. High temperatures reach up to 24 below. North winds around 5 miles per hour. Chance for snow tonight. Lows around 31 below. Overcast. About an inch of snow tonight through tomorrow, with another inch Thursday through Thursday night. And that's your weather on KFAR, 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM.
And streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. Now, Nick, what did you hear in that weather report? What can you surmise?
That it's going to warm up to colder than I wish it were?
We're going to get an inch of snow.
I do.
At minus 31 below.
It's going to be some pretty fluffy stuff.
So the question is, will the graders be out for the city of Fairbanks?
You know, maybe they should just tell everybody to go drive around and blow it away.
You know, my... yeah.
Well, at this time, Harry continued to be Harry. I mean, he had no choice. Mm-hmm. He had to earn a living. One of the things he did, he took a Dr. Joseph Holmes to the Nenana coalfields from Nenana down to the coalfields. Mm-hmm. And they got hit with an early snowstorm that dumped 18 inches of snow on them. Harry brought everybody out safely and unharmed, which just caused his reputation to soar even more. One of the local newspapers called him the youngest of the old breed of pioneers. That winter, Harry led Deming Wheeler, an Indiana banker and sportsman, on a winter trip of over 1,500 miles from Fairbanks to Kantishna, Iditarod, and Noko, onto the coast by way of the Kuskokwim. Despite extreme cold, Harry told a reporter that nothing of particular note occurred. While he was on this trip, his father died and his older brother inherited the entire estate. On July 31st, 1914, Harry married Frieda Louise Garish in Fairbanks. She'd been born in Benton, Montana, arrived in Fairbanks in 1905. She was a nurse, and those skills certainly kept her in high demand in Fairbanks of that time. Harry wrote his friend Sheldon that his wife was trying to civilize him, but it was an awful tough job. Just 10 days after his wedding, Harry guided a party to Diamond City on the Tolkat. The hunters were hunting for themselves and for specimens for Cambridge's Museum of Comparative Zoology. They were gone until January 1915, and on arrival back, Harry had to set off to bring in two of the party whom snow conditions had delayed. The year of 1915 was an interesting year of change. The airplane was becoming available. Harry knew that there was change. He saw what was happening from Valdez to Fairbanks with the Richardson Highway and Trail. Delegate Wickersham had put forth the legislation to build the railroad from Seward to Fairbanks. Harry bought a Model T and opened a service from Fairbanks to Nenana. And over the construction years of the railroad, a lot of freighters hauled for the railroad, helping to put themselves out of business. But Harry had the little cab service going, if you will, and did well. They had their first child on May 1st, 1917, in Nenana. Harry did hear of his old climbing mate, Walter Harper, who was away at school. John Fredson was Stuck's field assistant, operating the Pelican during their trips. Fredson left Alaska to attend Mount Hermon School. Later, Harry helped him find summer employment, helping with school costs. So Harry
took care of his own, yeah.
He did. He didn't let go of the good guys.
Yep.
He crossed paths now and then with Robert Tatum, who worked at the mission. And Walter returned to Alaska and contracted typhoid. After recovery, he and Stuck undertook a 2,500-mile trip through the Arctic from Fort Yukon to Kotzebue and return. Walter married Frances Wells and then, of course, was killed when the Princess Sophia went down. They both perished. On February 24, 1917, the bill was signed by President Woodrow Wilson, signing Mount McKinley National Park for the benefit and enjoyment of the people. And we will come back to the park establishment. What went on near the entry of the park at Riley Creek, that Harry was sort of a law enforcement agent, ranger, a lot of things. It's an interesting story. There was a lack of funding, which was not only kind of disingenuous as the U.S. entry in World War I was pretty isolationist. There was a lot they needed to spend money on other than parks. When the war ended in 1918, it was followed up by the Great Influenza outbreak. That lasted well into 1920 in Alaska. The Alaska Railroad under construction, money was needed to cover the rise in prices, so not much went to the park. Had funding been available, the original legislation was hard to enforce. The original park boundary was actually south of Wonder Lake, and on the southern boundary didn't even cover all of Mount McKinley, and it almost at best grazed Mount Foraker. The 1917 eastern boundary ran north-south and was as far west as Sanctuary River, which allowed a lot of people to stake property between the railroad and the park. At Riley Creek, the future headquarters was located directly across from Lynch's Roadhouse. So eventually, April 12, 1921, Harry was appointed ranger at large, which carried an annual token salary of a dollar. I don't know how they expected him to eat. But additionally, it was a good thing they gave him the dollar because he was also responsible for Glacier and Katmai National Monuments, both of which were unfunded. Sheldon and his friends took up collections to make sure Harry had the money to live on and could get in the field. At least in name, Sheldon's vision had come to pass. Karstens brought along his tenacity, courage, and work ethic. He was living in a tent until Louise and Eugene arrived in December. They took a room at the roadhouse. Finally, by late December, they had moved into a cabin that Harry built. So a little bit more civilization. Number of the rangers, there was a bit of turnover. Harry ended up being the sole ranger for a while. Around Christmas, he took a short break from patrols in the park, and he pretty well realized this was going to be a tough place to raise the family. Federal marshals were constantly sweeping the community around Lynch's Roadhouse for the numerous bootleggers. Opposition to the park was strong. Harry, through force of personality, though, was able to establish a ranger corps to patrol the park by dog team and snowshoe. Some of those facilities still exist. Again, a lot happened. Harry seldom ever spoke of the ascent of Mount McKinley and even softened a bit towards Stuck. There was one exception, though, to his silence. In the years before 1928, when he quit and left the area, he would visit Savage Camp, which was the main place for tourists, and by the light of campfire, and with little introduction, he would stand before the mountain and weave the tale of his assault of the slopes, which was something that anyone that witnessed it never forgot. 1925, there was an investigation of Harry launched. As the story spread, it became wilder and more distorted. People against the park were jumping for joy. There were just a number of things happened that year. A large fire started. One of the rangers unwisely burned a bootlegger's cabin, and the fire was quite destructive in the area. McFarlane had also been involved in wanton waste of game, and Harry found that out and had to fire him. One of his rangers insulted some visitors, and Harry punched him. And actually, he worked him over pretty good. It was more than just punching.
He beat the hell out of him.
He did. He gave him a quick lesson in manners.
Civility.
Yes, and that was kind of the... It was just
kumbaya,
part of the,
goodbye.
You know, it was part of the long-term effort to remove Harry and hand the position over to someone who would be more of a political administrator. The Alaskan delegates and governor had their favorites, but the really important people, Olhas Murray, everyone who was in the park that wanted the park, realized Harry was still the man. The other rangers, except for the one who got punched, were very staunch supporters. Many looked to apply for the position, including Alfred Hoose Brooks of the USGS, Colonel Steese, the highway builder. Mm-hmm. Eventually, Director Mather decided Harry would remain because Harry was doing exactly what was needed, and no one forwarded as a replacement could do any better. Harry Karstens died of congestive heart failure on November 28, 1955, here in Fairbanks. He was buried on Birch Hill on a cloudy day, and according, if you read the newspaper story, the records indicate that near the end of the service, there was a parting in the clouds, and you could see the mountain. So I thought that was kind of an, you know, apocryphal or not, that's the story I am willing to tell.
Wow. Thank you. Yeah, heck of a story.
You know, a lot of... famous climbers, Bradford Washburn, Charlie McGonigal, would visit him later in life. And some of them, Harry could tell, were having trouble believing that such a simple crew were able to conquer the mountain, which they had put great time and effort into. But he said, Harry made this quote, one of his last quotes, in regard to the North Peak climb. The old-timers are not mentioned, such as life for those who accomplish things but have no influence.
Wow. What day did he die again? In 55?
Yes, November 28th. So it's quite a story, and you're right. You know, we've said it a lot of times to some of these guys.
I think this summer
they don't make them like this.
I think this summer I'm going to go find his grave on Birch Hill. Yeah. You know, on Pioneer's Day, you know, you clean up Birch Hill.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go find that grave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be
pay
early
homage
May.
To it. Yeah.
And there are certainly grave maps to help to find them. So.
Yeah. I'm going to do that. Well, thank you. That was a, you know, as I said when I started reading your prose, I wasn't putting it down. heck of a lad.
I would recommend that if everybody wants a much longer version than we can possibly do here, Tom Walker has done three books, one on the park, one on Harry, one on the Kantishna. They're all excellent.
Fairbanks, that is our show for today. Mr. Nugent, thank you. I need you to get in your chi and figure out what we're doing in February, but I'll give you a few weeks to find your chi.
I'll give you some warning.
Fairbanks, have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow with gubernatorial candidate Mayor Dave Bronson.